Hello, and welcome to the Small Business Tax Savings Podcast, powered by Jetro and Associates. Get ready for another action-packed episode from our team that will help you save time, taxes, and keep more money in your pocket.
Hey, small business owners, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Small Business Tax Savings Podcast. My name is Mike Jezoshek, and I'm a CPA and founder over at Jetro, which is a digital accounting firm servicing small business owners exclusively. Now, this week's episode is going to be a little different. We hosted a webinar this week that I think would be great for this audience, so I wanted to include that in an episode. So that's what we're going to be airing on today. Now, I do want to apologize ahead of time. I am fighting a little bit of a cold, so if my voice seems a little bit hoarse or you hear some coughs, it's just that cold. So I'm going to go ahead and start a replay of that webinar now. Thank you again for tuning in for this week's episode, and I will see you next week. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get started now. We've got the recording set up, and we are good to go. So today's webinar is about accounting and tax secrets for small businesses. It's a webinar that we do every so often, and it's really good for businesses that are just starting out all the way to those that are established. There's going to be information that you can take from this webinar, whatever stage you are at your business. So as we get started here, just think about that as, you know, things that can be done. And we're going to be talking about tax strategies that save our clients thousands of dollars each and every year. We're going to talk about tips that can bulletproof you from an IRS audit, how to avoid getting that IRS audit. We're going to talk about developing a bookkeeping system and using that to facilitate financial success, using bookkeeping as a main source to really kind of help your business grow. So as we get started here, just a little bit about myself. My name is Mike Jezoshek. I'm a certified public accountant, CPA, and founder over at Jetro & Associates, which is a digital accounting firm. I have both my bachelor's and master's in accounting. And before starting at our accounting firm, I was in the online marketing industry. So I was CFO at a couple online marketing companies and really saw a need for businesses that needed that tax and bookkeeping solid foundation. And that's when we eventually started our accounting firm, Jetro & Associates. So prior to Jetro, I've been an entrepreneur all my life, working in various different businesses, various different industries, but just saw that need of someone that, you know, for small businesses, someone that needs that accountant background to really kind of help them in their business. And that's where we set out on a mission to help small businesses save on taxes and really set up their business for financial success. So that's just a little bit about myself. And just some house rules as we get started here. Just turn off some distractions. So I'm going to make this webinar as quick and informative as possible so you can get back to work. I know, obviously, for us, it's tax season. So Tuesday morning might be pretty busy. So just turn off some distractions so we can get through this information. And just another idea is before we get too far, I just want to give a fair warning. Everyone's needs are different and no tax situation is the same. So what we discuss here today will be general tax saving strategies, but it's important that you discuss this with a professional or your accountant regarding your specific situation prior to implementing any of the strategies. So take the information we use here today, talk to your accountant about it, about implementing it in your business. And finally, if you're looking to defraud the government of taxes, you're looking for shell companies, Swiss bank accounts, things like that, this is not your strategy. This is not the webinar for you. We're talking about legitimate tax saving strategies for everyday business owners. And so this is legal strategies that we're talking about today. Okay. So first item is we're going to talk about is avoiding an IRS audit. So, you know, for most Americans, avoiding an IRS audit is probably one of their biggest fears. And I want to make sure that we're able to help you avoid that. And as well as not only avoid that IRS audit, but bulletproof yourself in case of an IRS audit. So if you, in fact, do get audited, how do we make sure that you have the system set up in place to bulletproof yourself and win that audit? So a couple things. First item, open a separate bank account. When you start a new business, it might be easy to pay for all the startup costs and expenses out of your personal account and then figure out later. However, this can be really sloppy and cause a lot of confusion and possible misreporting down the road. So as a new business owner, it's important to have that separate bank account for your business. This will allow you to have a clean record of business items. and just make sure that there is no commingling of items between your business and personal account. So again, be sure to open up a separate bank account for your business that is separate from any kind of personal items. And this would be true for a credit card as well. If you have a credit card, make sure you have a separate credit card that is specifically for your business and no personal going on there. That will keep things easy. And if you do get audited, you have everything organized in one place and it's easy to give that information over to the IRS. Second item, keep great records and receipts. So keeping those good records will help you defend your business expenses. This is where having a fundamentally strong bookkeeping system comes into play. So as far as receipts, I'm kind of a cloud guy, so I always recommend using some type of cloud-based system to keep your receipts on. You take a picture of a receipt, upload it to the cloud, and it's going to be there and easy to find if you need it down the road. When it comes to receipts, and for our clients, we don't actually need to see the client receipts. The main purpose of the receipts is to help support an expense in the case of an IRS audit. So when you're filing those paper receipts, make sure you write on there the who, the what, the where, the why, the how much. So, you know, if you go out to dinner with an employee, write out which employee you went out to dinner with. Write that right on the receipt, take a picture of it, upload it to some cloud-based software. And so that not only helps, you know, back up that business purpose of the expense, but if you're reconciling that transaction down the road, you're going to be able to look back and see what that actual expense was for. So if the IRS comes auditing, let's just say 2 years from now, and they say, can you provide some support on this expense? Well, it might be hard to remember something that happened 2 years ago. But if you write on the receipt who you were with or what you were talking about or what the expense was for, you can just pull up that digital receipt, hand it over to the IRS, and it's an easy, easy discussion with them then. So keep great records, keep your receipts. Keep your receipts digitally, I recommend. It's just easier to find them and a lot less risk of losing an item. The next item is ditch the cash. So there's nothing that the IRS hates more than cash. One, it's hard to track. And so when I say ditch the cash, I would just say make sure that you have everything documented with a trail. So that's why cash is hard, because there's sometimes not a trail. So when clients pay for something with cash, we always recommend that they get a receipt that goes with it. So make sure that you have a receipt for any cash payments that you made. That's going to help back up that expense in the event of an audit. So the IRS is going to come in and say, you know, we see this cash withdrawal. Can you explain what that was for? Well, here's the receipt of what it was for. Again, cash, we recommend clients to avoid it as much as possible. But understand that sometimes if you're buying a trailer or something else, you might not be able to avoid that. So ditch the cash as much as possible. If you absolutely have to use cash, get a receipt so you can properly document the business expense related to it. Next item here is verify book income matches 1099-Ks. And this would just be 1099s in general. So 1099-Ks are, if you accept credit cards, your merchant processor is going to send you a 1099-K at year end. That 1099-K is going to represent the amount that was processed throughout the year. And that same copy also gets sent to the IRS. And so it's important that you verify that your income includes all of the items on that 1099. Otherwise, if you report an amount below that 1099 amount, it would be an immediate red flag to the IRS. So let's say, as an example, let's say you had $100,000 in sales, but the 1099-K showed $100,000, but you only received $95,000 in your bank account. So that's what you reported to the IRS, $95,000. That would be an immediate red flag because the 1099 shows a higher amount. Now, there are many reasons that it might not match, and this could be merchant fees, refunds, chargebacks that get subtracted from the sales prior to being deposited to your bank account. So again, let's say you have a sale for $150 and you only physically receive $142 because there was fees that got subtracted out of it before it hit your bank account. That merchant processor is going to report that $150 to the IRS, not the $142. So just be aware of this issue and make any adjusting entries at year end if needed to help true that back up. Again, this will be for any 1099 amounts. If you receive 1099s, whether it's a miscellaneous or a 1099-K, Be sure you're matching those up to your business return to make sure they match. Otherwise, you're going to have that immediate red flag to the IRS. And, you know, next item here is file on time. This may sound silly, but don't file a late tax return. There's nothing that you can do worse than filing a late tax return. If you need to extend, that's not a problem. There's nothing wrong with an extension. But just ensure that your extension is filed in time and your final tax return is filed at, you know, at that point. If you're unable to make a payment, at least file. File is the most important part, and then you can work out a payment plan with the IRS after that. And another thing to avoid an IRS audit, if you're operating as an S corporation, be sure to pay yourself a reasonable salary. And if you have no clue what I'm talking about is about S corp and reasonable salary, hold tight because we're going to be discussing that a little bit later. Also, if you have workers that you hired, make sure you're treating them properly as an employee or independent contractor. And I'm going to talk more about that on the next slide. So independent contractor versus employees. This is a topic that many business owners overlook or don't even realize is important. So the IRS definition of an employee is anyone who performs services for you, if you can control what will be done and how it will be done. So again, anyone who performs services for you, if you can control what will be done and how it will be done. So that doesn't really tell us a whole much, but what we kind of understand is that the biggest determination between an independent contractor or an employee comes down to control. Do you as the payer control what will be done and how it will be done? So to help illustrate this, I'm going to go through a series of questions that we use with a fitness studio client of ours. And I'm just using fitness studio as an example. We work with fitness studios often, but they're a good example to show, illustrate what might be an independent contractor versus what might be an employee. So these questions are, you know, as I ask these questions, if you answer yes to these questions, it generally means that you do, as the employer or company, have control and the worker should be classified as an employee. So the first question, does the fitness studio establish the training program / design the workouts? So is the fitness studio designing everything and establishing the workouts? If yes, likely an employee. Do clients pay the studio and not the trainer for their sessions? So if this is a trainer, do the clients pay the studio, not the trainer for their sessions? Yes, leaning towards employee. Does the studio determine the price the clients pay? If yes, again, leaning towards an employee. Now, if the specific independent contractor sets the price that the clients pay, and that would be more for independent contractor. Does the studio set the class times, or does the independent contractor get to decide when they're working? If the studio sets the times and requires the person to be there, likely an employee. If the worker determines when they're going to show up, when they're going to host their classes, likely an independent contractor. And does the fitness studio or gym pay for training equipment and the supplies? If yes, leaning towards more the employee. If no, the worker brings their own supplies, own equipment, leaning more towards an independent contractor. And this one is a little bit interesting. Do the trainers work under their individual name, not a separate business? If a worker is working under a business name, that definitely supports the independent contractor movement a little bit further. So do you intend for the person to work at your business for a while and not just temporary work? That can be another indicator that might lead towards an employee. So as you can imagine, you know, a business might answer yes to most of these questions. So it's not just a one question, yes or no, and that's it. So take your time and look through kind of these questions, look through control and determine, do you as the business owner have control over that employee or does that worker maintain most of their control and you're just subletting them out as a contractor? That's going to help give you an idea of how that person should be classified. A few characteristics of an independent contractor would be the worker has their own business and performs services for other businesses, not just yours. They design their own programs outside of, you know, your control as a business owner. They determine their schedule and pricing. they bring in their own clients to your business, and they provide their own equipment. These would be examples of someone that would be closer to that independent contractor. So what I tell clients is, after reading the facts, if you feel that your workers should be classified as independent contractors, definitely take advantage of that and pay them that way. If, however, you believe your workers should be employees, but you instead treat them as independent contractors, consider the risk you are taking and maybe rethink your options. Now, I often get people that say, well, my friend who owns a business does it this way, or I'm just going to fly under the radar, or the worker wants to be classified as an independent contractor. In my response to these clients is that just because one business does it one way doesn't mean it's correct. Their answers to those questions may be completely different, or they may just be hoping not to get caught. So you might think that you can fly under the radar, but it's not just the IRS we're going up against, it's also the state. And as your business continues to grow, the potential penalties, fees, fines, back taxes will continue to just add up. And so this is something to take seriously. Really look at your workers and determine if you are treating them as an independent contractor, put some documentation down that supports that so that you can back it up in the event of an IRS audit or a state audit down the road. And finally, if a worker requested to be an independent contractor, that doesn't necessarily make it okay. If you happen to get audited and the worker is supposed to actually be an employee, you are the one as the business owner that's going to be stuck holding the bag, not that worker. So just something to consider. Okay, so I just want to talk briefly on sales tax. I know a lot of small businesses have questions on sales tax. It can be very complicating. So just start off, there's no federal sales tax. Sales tax is only imposed on the state and local level. This means that every state and every locality can have different laws and rules that need to be followed. So it's important to also note that if a state doesn't have a statewide sales tax, there may be a locality within the state that does levy a sales tax. So look into those items. Now, whether you have to pay sales tax or not comes down to nexus. Generally stating, having sales tax nexus means you have sufficient physical presence within a state or locality, thereby requiring you to comply to the sales tax laws there. Now, you're probably wondering, how do I know if I have nexus? And there's three general guidelines to help answer that question. Property and location. So if you have a business that's physically located in a state that would qualify as nexus, so let's say you have a business with physical locations in Oklahoma City, Dallas, Memphis, you would have sales tax nexus in Oklahoma, Texas, and Tennessee. People. If you have employees in a state, that would qualify as nexus. So as an example, you have a business in Dallas, but you have a virtual employee in Miami. You would potentially have sales tax nexus in both Texas and Florida. And this last item here, inventory. So if you have a warehouse or inventory in a state, that would potentially qualify as nexus. So let's say you have a business that operates in Dallas, but you have your own product with fulfillment and inventory that's kept in San Diego. You would have sales tax nexus in both Texas and California. So if you're running a business that is subject to sales tax, again, most service-based industries are not, but if you're selling a product or another item like that, definitely look into this. Check with your state to see if you have sales tax nexus. We also work with a company that does research reports for clients to determine what their nexus might be and where they might have sales tax liability. So you can definitely jump in on that. And if you want their information, let me know and I can give that to you. If you do have nexus, the first thing you have to do is register for a sales tax license or permit in the state that you have nexus. This will allow you to begin collecting sales tax from your customers. Once you receive your license or permit number, it's important that you file your sales tax returns by the required due dates. It's usually monthly, quarterly, or annually. Even if you have no sales for a specific period, you will still need to file a zero return. So just keep that in mind with sales tax. Okay, so one of the most important items for today designing a bookkeeping system. Having a solid bookkeeping system should be the number one thing on every small business owner's checklist. There are so many benefits that it's not worth losing out on. So the first thing I recommend is utilizing cloud technology. Upgrading your accounting system to the cloud can really be beneficial for your business. Our favorite cloud bookkeeping software is called Xero. It's spelled X-E-R-O. But there are many others out there, including QuickBooks Online, FreshBooks, things like that. Not only does moving to the cloud give you access to your financial data at any time, anywhere, it also allows for easy collaboration with your accountant or any other party that may need access to your books. You'll never have to worry about backing up a file or making sure you have the right computer with you. You just simply log into a web browser and are able to access your books. Another beautiful thing about cloud software is that it easily integrates with other applications. So if you're using other apps to run your business, Xero or a cloud bookkeeping software can easily integrate with them. That's the first thing. Utilize cloud technology. Set up your business on this cloud technology. Next, it is vital to keep your books current. So having a good bookkeeping system is not just important for tax time, but it can actually help you run your business more effectively throughout the year. The key part here is that your bookkeeping has to be up to date. So we recommend doing your bookkeeping on at least a monthly basis to avoid getting too far behind. If you leave your bookkeeping sit with no activity, it's not useful to you anymore. There's a lot of things that you can get from doing your bookkeeping on a regular basis that can really help your business. You can see cost savings. You can see trends. You can see if you did a marketing campaign back in January, you can see how that's performing now and how that's affecting your sales. And you can see cost savings. You can go month to month comparison and see what there's ways, regular expenses that you can save on, that you can cut out. You know, a lot of times we have clients that have business expenses that they're paying for a software that they don't even use anymore. They just don't realize it's coming through. This is where bookkeeping can, you know, consistent bookkeeping can really be helpful. And finally, as you're performing your monthly bookkeeping sessions, be sure to plan for future expenses and taxes. Create budgets and projections so you can better understand your business's cash flow to plan for the future. Since you are also self-employed, it's also important to note that you are responsible for paying the IRS and state taxes, not an employer or somebody else. So when you're doing your budget and you're projecting, factor in cash that will need to be used to help pay for your personal taxes. That's really the solid foundation around a bookkeeping system. And I just want to go back to that: utilize cloud technology as well as keeping your books current. If you use most cloud-based bookkeeping software like Xero, for example, you can actually connect your bank account directly to the software. So it'll download all those transactions for you. Every business transaction that you have will download into the software, and then you just have to categorize it to where it needs to be. So it's a great option to make that bookkeeping easier and automate some of that incoming amounts. Okay, so on to the tax portion of the webinar. The number one mistake that business owners make is failing to plan. Now, I don't care how good you or your tax preparer are with a stack of receipts on April 15th, if you didn't know that you could hire your kids or implement some other tax planning strategy in the prior year, there's nothing that you can do at that point. So tax planning is about giving you a plan for minimizing your taxes. What should you do? When should you do it? How should you do it? And tax planning gives you two more powerful advantages. First, it's the key to your financial defenses. As a business owner, you have two ways to put more money in your pocket. Financial offense is making more money. Financial defense is spending less. And for most of us here today, taxes are oftentimes going to be one of our biggest expenses. So it makes sense to focus our financial defense where we spend the most, which is taxes. Second, tax planning guarantees results. You can spend all sorts of time, effort, and money promoting your business, but that doesn't absolutely guarantee results. You can organize your company correctly, hire your kids, implement tax strategies, and guarantee savings. Okay, so here's the bottom line and most important thing to understand. You lose every time you spend after-tax dollars that could have been pre-tax dollars. Let me repeat that. You lose every time you spend after-tax dollars that could have been pre-tax dollars. There are four main buckets of strategies that you can use to cut your tax bill. Timing-based strategies, this would be like a 401k or retirement plan where you're shifting today's tax bill down the road. Income shifting strategies to move taxable income to lower tax bracket payers. This would be like hiring your children. Code-based strategies like a Section 105B that may let you deduct your family's medical bills as a business expense. And finally, product-based strategies. These are like separately managed accounts, insurance, etc. Okay, so this is where we touch on our biggest kind of tax strategy that we often talk about. One big mistake is choosing the wrong business entity. Most business owners start as sole proprietors, then as they grow, establish an LLC or corporation to help protect them from business liability. But choosing the right business entity involves all sorts of tax implications as well. And many business owners are operating with entities that may have been appropriate when they first established their small business owner or their small business, but just don't work as effectively now. So what I want to talk about is sole proprietorships and single member LLCs. The main problem that we're trying to solve with a tax strategy at an entity level is this nasty thing called self-employment tax. If you operate your business as a sole proprietor or a single member LLC taxed as a sole proprietor, you will report the business net income on a Schedule C. That net income is subject to income tax at whatever your regular income tax rate might be, but you'll also pay self-employment tax at a rate of 15.3%. This nasty self-employment tax is the combination of Social Security and Medicare, which are also known as FICA taxes. So as a sole proprietor or single member LLC, you have to pay self-employment tax on 100% of your profit. So as an example here, a business that's profiting $80,000 per year would pay regular income tax at whatever rate that might be, but you would also pay self-employment tax on that income of roughly $11,000. And this is unavoidable in almost every way. There's no deductions, there's no credits. It doesn't even matter how many kids you have. This self-employment tax is coming at you if you make this money. So again, sole proprietor, single member LLC, you pay self-employment tax of 15.3% on 100% of your income. Now, fortunately, there's a way to help limit this self-employment tax. And this brings us to our number one tax strategy that we, you know, implement with over 90% of our clients, and that's called the S-corporation. The S-corporation can be an LLC or C-corp. It does not change how you are organized at the state level. It is simply a tax election with the IRS. And what the S-corporation does is it divides your business profit or your earnings into two parts, salary piece and a dividend piece. Now, as an S-corp, you need to take a reasonable owner salary, and this is the part that's subject to self-employment tax. So you would hire yourself as an employee, and you need to take a reasonable salary, and on that salary, you would pay self-employment tax. However, the rest of your earnings that you take in the form of distributions or owner's draw or dividends are not subject to self-employment tax. It's simply a law where these S-corps do not have to pay self-employment tax on their distributions or dividends. So again, with the S-corp, you pay self-employment tax on the salary part of your earnings. Everything else is not subject to self-employment tax. You would still pay your regular income tax rate on those items, but you're avoiding that self-employment tax. So you would just get a W-2 for your salary amount like any other employee would. The rest of the dividend portion, you would simply transfer to your personal account just as you do now. So just keep that in mind. This is a strategy that really makes sense. And we usually say when it makes sense is when you have profit take-home amount of $30,000 to $40,000 or more. If you're under that $30,000 to $40,000, you might not need, you know, we oftentimes say don't do an S-corp yet until you hit that amount. It's not going to hurt you at all, but it's not going to help you as much as if you're above $30,000 to $40,000 in profit. So if you're under $30,000 to $40,000 in profit, likely just hold tight. If you're over that amount, definitely look into doing this S corp to help eliminate some of that self-employment tax. So I want to go through an example to show you the savings that are available for with the S corp. So a minute ago, we looked at a business owner earning $80,000 as a sole proprietor that was paying over $11,000 in self-employment tax. Now, let's imagine that we take that same base business and have it taxed as an S corp. While doing that, you know, we decide that a reasonable salary is $36,000, and the remaining $44,000 of profit would be taken as a dividend or an owner's distribution. By doing this, we would save almost $5,800 in self-employment tax. And this is simply valuable because we're eliminating that tax. That tax is going away. We're not asking you to put $5,000 into a retirement plan and then deduct it, or take $5,000 and buy new equipment and then deduct it. We are simply avoiding that $5,700 in self-employment tax. Now, it's also important to note that this is not just a one-time tax saving. This is a tax saving that you will see as a business owner year after year after year. So this can be very beneficial for you as you look into it. Okay, so let's cover some of the nuts and bolts. You might say, why wouldn't everyone do an S corporation? So first, you need to have either an LLC or corporation set up with your state. Then you would need an employer identification number. And then you would file the actual S corp election, which you make on form 2553. So filing the S corp election is pretty straightforward. You have an LLC or corporation already created. You file form 2553, which is the S corp election, to now, you know, change you to be taxed as an S corporation. Now, you also have to take payroll, which is a reasonable salary, and that's required. So this can be a major red flag to the IRS if you operate as an S corp and not taking payroll. So it's important that with the S corporation strategy, you must take a reasonable salary and you must pay yourself as an employee. And then finally, you're going to need to file a separate business tax return. And this is Form 1120S. So basically, the S corporation is a pass-through entity. You file a business tax return, which again is 1120S. That's going to report all your business income. You're not going to pay any tax directly on that form, but then it's going to flow through to your personal return, which is where you'll eventually end up paying that tax. So there are some hard costs with the S corp, the salary piece. You know, to run payroll, there are some hard costs there. Now, I would say if you already have employees, it's real simple to just add on another employee, which would be yourself. So that's the one hard piece with the S corporation. And then the separate business tax return usually has some higher costs involved with filing that tax return with your accountant. So those are the two pain points: payroll, separate business tax return. Outside of those two pain points, there's no disadvantage to it. So talk to your accountant. If you're in that $30,000 to $40,000 mark, definitely consider this. Like I said, we recommend it to 90% of our clients that are over that amount. And the ones that we don't recommend it to, they're likely in some state or some weird area where it doesn't make sense for them to do the S corporation. Like Tennessee, for example, oftentimes is not great for the S corporation. Okay, so now I want to talk about some, you know, additional tax strategies that we can then put onto the S corporation as well. So retirement, a SEP IRA or solo 401k. So a SEP IRA is an IRA that allows you to contribute more than the usual IRA limit for yourself and your employees. They kind of resemble profit sharing plans, except you make contributions to an individual IRA account rather than a qualified plan trust account. So here are some of the rules. You can contribute up to $56,000 as the employer, but you cannot exceed 25% of salary or 20% of earned income for sole proprietors of partnerships. All employees age 21 or older who have worked 3 of the last 5 years earning more than $600 must be included in this plan. So if you have employees, consider that any contribution you make to yourself must be also made to your employees. The nice thing about SEPs is they're easy to manage and there's no annual administrative or reporting requirements. So the next item, and these two are usually kind of competing retirement options, is the solo 401k. The solo 401k is easier to manage, compared to a regular 401k, and is also less more cost effective. It's usually reserved for those business owners with no employees. So you can contribute up to $19,000, but that contribution cannot exceed your yearly salary. As an employer, you can then match up to 25%. The biggest thing with the SEP and the solo 401k is that you can make contributions to them up until the date you file your tax return. So if you file your tax, if your tax return is on April 15th, and that's when you file your tax return, you can make contributions to the SEP IRA and solo 401k up until that date. Now, the biggest difference is that if you have a SEP IRA, you can open and fund it after the year's over. But if you have a solo 401k, that account must be open before year end, and then you can fund it the next year, but it must be open before year end. So if you're sitting right now doing your taxes and you're looking at a SEP IRA, or you're looking at ways to save some tax strategies and you don't have a solo 401k open, the SEP IRA is often going to be your best option because you're able to open it and contribute it still for the prior year. But it, you know, solo 401k might be a better option if you already have something, if you already have it opened up and you just need to fund it. If you haven't, you know, most of these two strategies, SEP IRA and solo 401k, are really made for those business owners that are solo business owners and not employees. If you have employees, consider the simple IRA or a regular 401k, or if you plan to contribute a lot to them, then you can look at a SEP IRA as an option as well. So just keep that in mind. Okay, now let's talk about another opportunity, family employment. Hiring your children and your grandchildren can be a great way to cut taxes on your income by shifting that income to someone else who pays less. Yes, there's a minimum age, and for now, at least they have to be 7 years old. But the first $12,200 of earned income in 2019 is taxed at zero. And that the reason for this is because it's the standard deduction for a single taxpayer, even if you claim them as your dependent. So let's say you pay your children your child $8,000, they're going to pay no taxes on that, and you're going to be able to deduct that as a business expense because they're under that standard deduction. Now, the biggest thing is that you do have to pay them a reasonable wage for the services that they perform. So in the tax court typically says a reasonable wage is what you'd pay a commercial vendor for that same service with an adjustment made for the child's age or experience. So if your 12-year-old son cuts grass for your rental properties, pay him what a landscaping service might charge. If your 15-year-old helps keep the books or writes checks for your business, pay them a little bit less than what a bookkeeping service might charge. And so to help audit-proof your return, just make sure you write out a description and keep a timesheet for any children or grandchildren that you have. You can pay them by check or digitally so that you can document that payment. Now, if you're set up as an LLC, single member LLC, or sole proprietor, you can pay them directly. There's no W-2 or 1099 that's needed. If you're set up as an S corporation, we recommend setting up a family management company, which would be an LLC or a sole proprietor, for the services. So let's say you have your children doing lawn cutting services for your business and you're set up as an S corporation. We would recommend having a family management company that provides lawn services. And then your S corp would pay that family management company for the lawn services. And then you would in turn go ahead and pay your children with no W-2 or 1099 needed. So that's the way that you can pay them without having to file a W-2 or 1099. You get the tax deduction on the business side, assuming that their total income is below that $12,200 mark for 2019. They would not pay tax on that income. So you're simply shifting money from your business, getting that expense, and pushing it to someone that has a lower tax rate. This is a strategy that should be heavily implemented for people that have families with little children, with people that have low income that want to take advantage of these tax savings. Okay, the 14-day home rental. And so for this strategy, I kind of say that it's tax planning is all about thinking outside of the box, but still remaining within the tax code. And this is where this strategy comes into play. So anybody who rents less than 14 days pays no income tax. Let's say you rent your house out for 12 days in the year. You do not have to report that as income tax on your return. So one strategy that we implement is working with another business owner, where you work with a business owner to hold meetings in their house, and then you'll also host meetings for that business owner in your house. And what this can do is it can create a deduction for you. The person receiving it pays no income tax on that deduction. And then when they host their meeting at your house, the same thing happens. So you're getting a tax deduction. The person receiving it does not have to pay income taxes on it. So this might be an example. Let's say you have an annual, you know, quarterly meeting, or you have an annual shareholder meeting. You might rent out your, you know, a business owner friend of yours house. You're going to pay him for rent, and just make sure you have documentation, like what would that be worth? So let's say you're renting out his a conference room, or you're renting out his dining room. What would a hotel down the road charge for a conference room rental? Pay that rate to your friend, and then do the same for them when they have their annual shareholder meeting. Have them do it at your house. He's going to pay you a reasonable rate for that renting your house from them. You report no income on it, and he gets the tax deduction. So it's similar to that, you know, it's similar to a strategy where you get a tax deduction for it, and no one has to pay income tax on that piece. Again, this is the 14-day home rental. Any rent that's paid for less than 14 days does not have to be, is not subject to income tax. Okay, so you may have heard about the new tax law, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. I don't want to go too deep into the new tax plan. This could be a series of its own of webinars. However, I do want to hit on some very high-level quick items. For business owners, the Section 199A deduction is an important thing to know about. In a nutshell, the Section 199A deduction is a pass-through entity tax cut that gives the owners of pass-through entities, like sole proprietors, partnerships, S-corporations, etc., a deduction equal to 20% of their qualified business income. So as an example, you're an S-corporation shareholder earning $100,000 from the company, you would get a $20,000 deduction. Now, if you're single with taxable income of $157,500 or more, or you're married filing jointly with taxable income of $315,000 or more, things do get a little bit more complex, and so you might want to research this further. But if you're under those income limits, just know we're generally stating 20% deduction on qualified business income. But as you hit those caps, look into it a little bit further. Next item, corporate rate. Now, there's probably not a whole ton of C corporation or owners on this webinar, but the corporate rate is now a simple flat 21%. Entertainment expenses. Here's a change that many people were not happy with. Under the old rules, you could deduct 50% of the cost of business-related entertainment expenses. You take someone to the ballpark, you take someone to a theater, whatever it might be, those deductions were 50% deductible. Now, the new law repeals that deduction, regardless of what business entity you operate. So business meals are still 50% deductible, just no entertainment costs. Entertainment is no longer deductible. Now, let's say you're holding a suite at a Brewer game or at a baseball game, and there's cost for the entertainment piece, and then there's cost for the food and beverage piece. As long as you have them separated on an invoice, you can still take the 50% deduction on the food and beverage piece, and that entertainment cost would just not be deductible. So if you're in a situation like that, be sure to ask them to break that out on the invoice so that you can take advantage of that. Next item with the new Tax Cut and Jobs Act, bonus depreciation. So with the new law, businesses can claim 100% bonus depreciation for qualified property placed in service between September of 2017 through December 31st of 2022. So generally, qualified property means anything except real estate and land improvements. This can also apply to both new and used property. So the Tax Cut and Jobs Act had a lot of good things for business owners, a few bad things, but overall, people should be seeing tax savings from it. So, you know, we covered a lot of different topics today, and most of them were just kind of scratching that surface from. Some of the biggest takeaways I want you as a business owner to retain from today's webinar is start tax planning now so that you can utilize various strategies that are available to you and your business so that you can save thousands, each and every year and be ahead of the game. Develop and maintain a solid bookkeeping system. This will be the core of your business's success and will help bulletproof you from an IRS audit, as well as make tax season a breeze. It'll also help you grow your business and assist you in understanding of how your business is performing and where you can improve. If you happen to miss any of the items that we discussed or want to hear them again, there will be a recording, so definitely take time to go through these items that are important to you and your business. Okay, so just want to say, if you're looking for more, you're looking to say, what are the next steps? How can I dig in a little bit deeper? We have two pieces that I want to discuss. First, we have a Facebook group. If you search for Facebook, Small Business Tax Secrets, there'll be a free Facebook group that shows up. In there, we talk about tax strategies. Bring your questions in there. Let us know the kind of questions that you're facing, and we can help you out in there. We also have a podcast. So our podcast is a weekly episode. They're nice, short tidbits that help you get a little bit of tax saving strategies, a little bit of tax information in. If you go on any platform that you listen to podcasts on, you can search Small Business Tax Savings Podcast, and that'll show up. I also want to talk a little bit about our package options that are available. So for clients or businesses with a half $1 million or less in annual gross revenue, we have three basic packages, or three packages that are preset. The basic package, the standard package, and the premium package. Our basic package is really our prepare and file package. We do a quarterly review of the bookkeeping. So every quarter we're going to do a review of the bookkeeping that the client is actually completing the bookkeeping. Then we'll file their business tax return and their personal tax return at year end. Now our standard package is where we get much more involved. So we still do that business tax return and personal tax return, but with our standard package, we're doing monthly bookkeeping, we're doing quarterly financial statements, but the client has access to the cloud-based bookkeeping software at any point in time. So if they need to access the software, they can log on and download financial statements at any point in time. With our standard package, we also do tax planning. So we're going to look at ways, how can we minimize your tax liability as much as legally possible? We also do estimated quarterly tax calculations. So every quarter we determine what amount is due, and you can have a good idea of where your tax liability is going to be throughout the year. The zero account, which is the cloud bookkeeping software, is included in our pricing for this package. Every year we do a yearly Jetro analysis, and that's basically where our team sits down internally and looks at your account and sees where we can maybe provide some tax or some savings to you on just your overall business operations. So for example, if you have merchant account fees that are really high, we'll say, have you shopped around your merchant account to see if you can get lower fees? Or if you have bank charges that seem to just be racking up, we'll say, have you looked at other banks that might be able to provide free checking accounts? Things like this. We're going to look on our, internally as a staff on our side, and see if there's anything that we can see as a cost savings to you in your business. And you also have a dedicated accountant and unlimited email support. Our premium package is just the next step up. We do bookkeeping on a weekly basis. We send you monthly financial statements. You become part of our Jetro Success Program, which is quarterly coaching calls. So we can talk about anything from forecasting, budgeting, coaching, whatever it might be. We'll kind of work out a plan for you every quarter. We'll sit down for a quarterly coaching call. We also include 1099s in this package, limited audit defense, and unlimited email, phone, and video support. So again, I mentioned that this options are, those are our package options for businesses with $500,000 or less in annual gross revenue. If you're over $500,000, contact us directly and we're going to create a custom pricing for you and custom package based on your specific needs. So for those under $500,000, this screen shows our pricing for it. Our basic package starts at $100 a month. Our standard package starts at $190 a month. And our premium package starts at $299 per month. Now, we also have some add-ons available. So if you're looking for accounts receivable or accounts payable assistance, we can do that. And then we also have a payroll add-on available as well. So we can also help with payroll. Now, as part of this webinar today, we are offering a first month free for anyone who signs up. So if this interests you, shoot us an email at sales@jetrotax.com and we can get you into a first month free. Just let us know what package you're in, and then we can set up a time to have that initial phone call. Now, finally, if you're not quite ready yet for a full service, whether it's tax and accounting, we have a Jetro Steps to Success, which is a free program where we show you how to take control of your bookkeeping and tax all on your own. So we teach you how to set up a bookkeeping system, how to manage it. We teach you about various entity options and which one might be a best fit for your business. We teach you how to set up and manage your own payroll. We talk about tax saving strategies that can save you thousands each and every year. And then we also have advanced bookkeeping and tax strategies that will be used to help really propel your business growth and savings. So we have this free program. Again, it's free with one caveat. In order to get access to this program, you need to sign up for a cloud bookkeeping software called Xero through us. So we ask that you sign up for the software through us. It's the same price that you would pay Xero directly. And then you're going to get this free program on the back end. And this is just where we get a little bit of commissions from you signing up through us for that software. And that helps fund this, free program that we're able to provide on the back end. So again, you get the Xero software at the same price you'd pay for Xero. And then you get this free training on the back end that teaches you how to do bookkeeping, payroll, and tax strategies. If you're interested in this, you can sign up at www.jetrotax.co/challenge. Again, it's www.jetrotax.co/challenge. Now, that's all I have for today. So if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. On the screen, you have my email. You can book a meeting with me if you want to learn more about what we do and discuss your specific scenario. You can check us out on our website. So our website is www.jetrotax.com. Our podcast website is www.taxsavingspodcast.com. You can shoot me an email at mjezoshek@jetrotax.com or sales@jetrotax.com. And if you want to book a meeting so that we can learn more about your business and how we may be able to help you out, you can go to calendly.com/mjezoshek. I want to thank you guys for jumping on today. I want to thank you for helping me fight through this cold that I'm facing and understanding that my voice is a little bit scratchy and a little bit thick. So I want to thank everyone for jumping on today. I look forward to talking to you guys in the future. Have a great rest of your week.
This has been another episode of the Small Business Tax Savings Podcast from the team at Jetro & Associates. If you have any questions, feel free to email them, tax@jetrotax.com. We have packages for small business owners starting at just $75 a month. If you enjoyed our podcast, please take the time out to give us a 5-star review in iTunes or wherever you listen. This helps us to bring you useful tips to help you grow your small business. Thanks for listening and have a great day.